This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Having a child with Down syndrome, a genetic disorder associated with physical growth delays, characteristic facial features, and mild to moderate intellectual disability, used to be a surprise. But modern medicine has developed prenatal tests that can reveal the condition in utero. Here's Dr. Brian Scottko, co-director of the Down Syndrome Program at Massachusetts General Hospital.
Since October of 2011, there is a new prenatal screening test which looks at DNA from the fetus that is floating in the mother's circulation. And with a simple blood prick, we can determine with high accuracy whether or not the fetus might have Down syndrome or another chromosomal condition. And what this means is that Down syndrome is now shifting from a postnatal surprise diagnosis to a prenatal diagnosis for many more couples, which means many more couples will need to make the personal decision on what they choose to do with the pregnancy after they learn about the diagnosis prenatally.
Dr. Scottko will be coming to Charlotte next week to take part in the first ever Carolina's Down Syndrome Conference organized by the Down Syndrome Association of Greater Charlotte. The good news about these prenatal diagnoses also raised concerns about parents deciding to end a viable pregnancy based on their fears of having a child with Down. Dr. Scottko acknowledges that and encourages people to educate themselves first.
We think it's very important that couples are able to make an informed decision. And as a medical geneticist, I try hard to make sure that they have the most up-to-date facts in a culturally sensitive context so they can make the right personal decision for them. In our counseling sessions, I make sure that prenatal couples, if they haven't made a decision, have access to the letter case materials, which is a collaborative effort from medical organizations and Down syndrome organizations to create the materials that expectant parents want to read that have the up-to-date, honest information. If couples have made a decision to continue the pregnancy, there is an entire website for them, DownSyndromePregnancy.org. And of course, I always make sure that expectant couples have the opportunity, if they want, to meet other parents, parents who have children with Down syndrome, who could give them the real story about what life is like to have a family member with Down syndrome.
We'll put that DownSyndromePregnancy.org website on our website at WFAE.org later on today. When Dr. Scottko arrives in Charlotte, he will be stressing to his medical colleagues not only the need to provide current information, but he wants them to understand that much of a prospective parent's decision may be the result of how the doctor delivers the diagnosis, which he suggests should be done in a neutral, non-biased manner.
And I think physicians could also be an important link between families who are making those decisions and families who already have children with Down syndrome who are willing to serve as sage advices, as people who could give the honest opinions on what it's like to raise and have a child with Down syndrome. This is the one part of medicine that is much of a science as it is an art form, and I think we need to continue to think about and hone our practices for delivering difficult diagnoses.
And what is life like when you have a family member with Down syndrome?
My colleague Sue Levine, Rick Goldstein, and I have studied family relationships when one member has Down syndrome, and we have learned that the positives of having a brother or sister, a son or daughter with Down syndrome far outweigh any of the negative or challenging moments. And particularly, brothers and sisters have said that they have learned so many important life lessons from their brothers and sisters. 88% of them say that they're distinctively better people because of their brother or sister with Down syndrome. And we have found that so many brothers and sisters grow up to go into caring capacities and in professions where they take care or help others with disabilities. So the family unit is permanently changed when a member with Down syndrome is in it. But families have said over and over again that it is a positive experience on the whole.
Well, obviously, we're going to spend this hour talking about Down syndrome and meet a young man with Down, but there is another even more important recent medical breakthrough that may at first blush cause prospective Down syndrome parents to worry. But the fact that the scientists have now found a genetic connection between Down and Alzheimer's is actually a cloud with a silver lining. Again, Dr. Brian Scottko, co-director of the Down Syndrome Program at Massachusetts General Hospital.
We're very excited here at Massachusetts General Hospital to be offering two phase two clinical drug trials. We have two study drugs that might hold promise for improving cognition in adults with Down syndrome, and one drug in particular that might be able to stave off Alzheimer's disease, which is associated with Down syndrome. The studies are underway, and it is a new time and a new era for research for people with Down syndrome. If the study drugs prove to be effective, and we still have a long way to go, it means that there might be a clinical opportunity for people with Down syndrome to take a medication, hopefully with minimal side effects, to improve their cognition, working memory, and learning, and potentially, again, to stave off Alzheimer's.
As I said, Dr. Scottko will be coming to Charlotte to take part in the first ever Carolinas Down Syndrome Conference next week and could not be with us live this morning, but with us live for the rest of the hour is Catherine LaRiviere, Executive Director of the Down Syndrome Association of Greater Charlotte. They're sponsoring that conference next week. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
And Jonathan Isley is a member of the Board of Directors for the Down Association of Greater Charlotte. Mr. Isley's brother, Maddie, has Down syndrome. Welcome to the show as well.
Good to be here, Mike.
You know, years ago, Down syndrome children were hidden away. Sometimes they were institutionalized, their place in the world obviously minimized. And I thought that we had kind of, because we've done a show on Down in the past, I thought we had come to understand that the diagnosis, though disappointing, does not assign that child to a life of misery. So how is it that in 2014, a prenatal diagnosis still carries the kind of weight that parents might consider terminating a pregnancy? I'm not sure which one of you should take that.
Well, obviously, when these parents hear that there's some kind of diagnosis, some kind of disability, it's going to be disheartening, and they realize that there's going to be a lot of challenges associated with that. You know, they're hearing that from doctors and people around them in the hospital at that time. But you kind of have to wait and hear it from someone who's been there, someone who has experienced life with a person that has Down syndrome. And like Brian Scottko just said, people like myself who are part of families with people with Down syndrome will tell you that it is overwhelmingly a positive experience.
Are you called upon, you and your family called upon regularly in this area to advise prospective parents about what to expect?
Not necessarily. We are involved through the Down Syndrome Association. The association does do a first call program. We're not part of that program at this point, but just kind of more on a grassroots level, you know, people that we've connected with through the organization.
Is that something, Catherine, that the organization does? It facilitates these meetings?
Yes. We have, it's called a first call program, and it is for families that receive a prenatal or a postnatal diagnosis. And as Dr. Scottko was saying, the prenatal we're seeing more and more of, and that's wonderful because these parents are reaching out to us and saying, we need to know more information. And that's our role as an organization. It's not to lead a decision. It's to help people make an informed decision. I have an almost 10-year-old son with Down syndrome. And when I was told postnatally that he had Down syndrome, my first thought was, I don't even know what that means. So our job as an organization is to help people really understand what Down syndrome is, to meet other families. Like Jonathan said, his family is not currently in that program. We tend to use parents of children under the age of 5 who go through an intensive training program, just because when you have children that younger, you're more likely to remember what it was like to be pregnant and really relate to the other families. And those volunteers, their role is to talk to these parents and let them see what it looks like, not to encourage a decision, but to help them make an informed decision.
So Dr. Scottko was not terribly clear, because we didn't have time to ask him, about exactly what these new diagnoses are and how they work. But as I understand it, and you correct me if I'm wrong, a prenatal diagnosis used to have to involve amniocentesis and one other procedure, which also put the pregnancy in jeopardy, and it could have put it in jeopardy for no good reason. Now we have blood tests that can pretty much, beyond a shadow of a doubt, determine whether or not Down syndrome is present in the fetus. Have these new tests heightened fears and concerns, or do they help to allay them in some way?
I think they've heightened it, but a positive part about that is that more families are reaching out to us. We have definitely seen more prenatal diagnoses come through our office in the past 2 years than we ever have before, which is an awesome opportunity for us to help these families learn more. And part of what is not always clear is that it's not really a diagnosis, it's a screening. The new blood test is not 100% accurate. So a lot of times these families are making a decision based on something that is, you know, more than 95% accurate, but they don't necessarily, it's not proven. It's not like an amniocentesis that's 100%.
Now, you mentioned just a second ago that you have a child with Down. How old is that child?
His name is Cameron, and he'll be 10 in December.
So just 10 years ago, he was born, and you said that when he was born, you didn't even know what Down was. So I think we maybe need to explain to listeners what it is. It is caused by the presence of an extra copy of chromosome 21. What does that do to the child?
You know, it's different for every child. I think, Mike, one thing that the people don't always understand is that you can see the same range of abilities in somebody with, in people with Down syndrome as you do in people who are typically developing. Down syndrome generally causes speech delays, some fine motor, such as handwriting, things like that, as well as gross motor delays. Cameron didn't walk until he was 2.5. And then he started running everywhere. But you also see a lot of intellectual disabilities. But again, there's such a huge range with that. There are a lot of children with Down syndrome that are very close to being on level with their typical peers. And then there's some children with Down syndrome that have more significant delays.
Hmm. What about Maddie, Jonathan? When Maddie was born, I don't know whether you're older or younger than he is, but did your parents know what Down was? Did they understand what the implications were right away?
They did, and they obviously have learned a great deal more throughout the years. I am a couple of years older than Maddie, but he was actually diagnosed after birth. They didn't realize he had Down syndrome until maybe a day or two later. They knew that there were some complications. For example, his esophagus was not connected to his stomach, so he immediately had to go into surgery right after he was born to have that corrected. And then the Down syndrome diagnosis came sometime after that. But, you know, they always knew that they were up to the challenge. Fortunately for me, they decided to keep Maddie around. And, you know, our life has been just tremendously more interesting because of Matthew.
I think that bears repeating. Dr. Skotka mentioned it. I mentioned it because it's in the literature everywhere, that 88% of siblings, I don't know how they arrived at 88%, but 88% of siblings report that having a Down syndrome child in their family is an enhancing experience. Why?
It certainly is, and it's. I'm sure everybody has their own reasons, because every person with Down syndrome does have different skills and different abilities to offer. For us, it's just been such a journey of us becoming more patient, more accepting of people who have different challenges. It also just kind of connects you to this great community of other families, other people that are going through the same thing. And personally, if I had to choose one reason, I would just say it has definitely made me a more patient person. You realize that everybody's not the same, and you'll become more willing to help those that might have more difficulties than yourself.
Now, Jonathan's a sibling. You are a mother, Catherine. We have about 20 seconds. Has the impact on your family been similar?
Yes. My older daughters are much better people than I was at their age because of their younger brother.
Hmm. Catherine LaRiviere is the executive director of the Down Syndrome Association of Greater Charlotte. Jonathan Isley is a board member. We're going to talk more about this, and I want to get into this connection between Down syndrome and Alzheimer's, because that's very concerning to a lot of people, and we'll do that when we come back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Blumenthal Performing Arts, presenting rock legend Ian Anderson performing the best of Jethro Tull Friday, October 3rd at Knight Theater. Tickets 704-372-1000. And Wells Fargo, committed to neighborhoods, small businesses, and the communities they serve. More information available at wellsfargo.com/stories. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far. Well, tomorrow on this program, although we go to the grocery store for food, all that food comes from farms. And according to the USDA, the number of farms and farmers are declining. We need more growers. We need to pay more attention to building the local and regional food economies, something we've talked about a lot over the course of time on this program. Eating local isn't just hip, though. It's vital for environmental stability and keeping farmers in business. And we will talk about that in an encore presentation of Charlotte Talks tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, advances in research are leading doctors to rethink how to treat cancer, and in some cases of early detection, whether to treat it at all. New ideas in the approach to cancer treatment.
Join the conversation on the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE, listener-funded public radio.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about Down syndrome in advance of the first ever Carolina's Down Syndrome Conference organized by the Down Syndrome Association of Greater Charlotte. It will be September 26th and 27th. Catherine LaRiviere is the executive director, and John Isley is a member of the board of that sponsoring organization. How long have we known about a connection between Down syndrome and Alzheimer's? And the connection comes from the fact that the extra copy of chromosome 21 that leads to Down happens to be the same chromosome that controls the production of a substance called amyloid, which forms sticky plaques in the brain, which causes Alzheimer's. How long have we known about the connection?
It's really just been the past 5 years when they've even started to find the link. And then really in the past 12 months is when you've seen a lot of research being done on it.
And the new news here, I think, is that there are drugs being developed that might open the door not only to hope of Alzheimer's avoidance in Down syndrome children, but also to cognitive improvement. That sounds like a very big deal to me, is it?
It's a huge deal, and I think it's a very positive on a couple of different sides. First of all, you have the fact that we're talking about improving cognitive abilities in adults with Down syndrome. And, you know, the typical, if there is such a thing as a typical person with Down syndrome, but their average IQ, they have discovered that if you can increase that IQ by 15 points, it makes the difference between independent living and non-independent living for an adult with Down syndrome. Hmm. So the fact that they're able to use this Alzheimer's research to help people with Down syndrome live independent lives is incredible. On the other side, they have found that people with Down syndrome, because they are so prone to get Alzheimer's, are perfect for us to be able to develop more Alzheimer's drugs and different therapies for people with Alzheimer's. So the research going on has the incredible potential to be helping both groups, people with Down syndrome as well as people with Alzheimer's.
Which leads to an obvious question. Because these are the perfect candidates, well, first of all, I'll get to the obvious question in a second, but first of all, explain to me why these are really good candidates to test some of these drugs to improve cognitive abilities and reduce the incidence of Alzheimer's. Why are these people a good population to test them, to test in?
Studies have shown that people with Down syndrome are almost guaranteed to get Alzheimer's by the time they're 40. Obviously, different levels as far as how severe it could be. But, you know, some studies have shown up to 100% of people with Down syndrome, and other studies have shown over 50%. So I don't think that there's one study that's kind of definitive about the number. But, you know, as a parent, again, I think it's very scary to think I spend all this time helping my child get a great education now, and then by the time he's 40, he could possibly have Alzheimer's disease.
Of course, that could happen to anybody, but other diseases could interfere, but there's a pretty good chance that that is what's going to happen. Now, these young people get CAT scans. Their blood chemistry is monitored. This is all happening on a voluntary basis. So if they are successful in reducing the rate of Alzheimer's, or if they're what is the question here? Will we see an increase in the number of Down individuals who will need Alzheimer's care in the future if we don't do this?
Yes, definitely.
Because they're living longer lives.
Absolutely. You know, it used to be even 20, 30 years ago, they said the average life expectancy of someone with Down syndrome was in the high 20s or 30s. And now the average life expectancy is 60. So now, wow. I think for the first time, part of the reason there's been such a push for the research is because there are so many individuals with Down syndrome who are over 40 now.
But the implications for the population at large are great here, because if these drugs work and improve the lives and improve the cognitive abilities and stave off, as Dr. Scottko mentioned, the incidence of Alzheimer's in people who are pretty much guaranteed to get it, the greater population will benefit because these will understand what's going on and how these drugs work. Do you worry, though, about these people being used, these Down syndrome individuals being used kind of as test cases, guinea pigs?
No, I don't. As a parent and as a professional, I don't personally see that. I mean, there's no forced testing going on. It's like any other trial. It's all voluntary. And the individuals with Down syndrome and their families are making a joint decision to be part of these studies. And like you said, I think that there's so much advantage that we could see come out of this that is for more than just Down syndrome. And I applaud these families that are willing to do that.
And it is relatively non-invasive. It's not a painful procedure. You're not really putting these folks at risk, are you?
Absolutely not. All the studies that I've read, there's no putting them at risk.
One of the things that Dr. Scottko, who joined us earlier in the program and who will be one of your key speakers at this conference next week, one of the things that he mentioned is the importance of how a prenatal diagnosis of Down is delivered. And as I understand this, you see this as particularly important in light of these new blood screenings for Down syndrome. How have these new blood screenings impacted the importance of the doctor explaining things to the parent in a different way?
I think when they're told, obviously, is going to be different now, because if they're getting the pre-screening, they're finding out ahead of time. I think families can be very emotional, whether it's prenatal or postnatal. So what the doctor says and how they say it are very, very important. Dr. Scottko tells funny stories about that families can tell you what color tie the doctor was wearing when he gave them the news because it's such a profound moment. And when Dr. Scottko is here in Charlotte, he's actually going to be speaking to doctors both at Presbyterian Hospital and at CMC about how to give that neutral diagnosis. You know, you hear these horror stories about parents that get a call that say, hey, the test came back that your baby has Down syndrome. When do you want to schedule the termination? And you know, it obviously that is, of course, an option for that family, but that's not necessarily how you want to lead somebody. How about saying the test came back, they have Down syndrome. Here's information about Down syndrome.
And again, these new tests are relatively non-invasive, unlike the earlier tests that not only were invasive but also jeopardized the pregnancy, and sometimes for absolutely no good reason. That means, it would seem to me, that more people will get them. Should everybody get one, or should every pregnant woman get one of these tests, or is this something that you only do because it's hereditary and it does seem to run in families?
Actually, most Down syndrome does not run in families, Mike.
Really?
There's only one type of Down syndrome called translocation that is hereditary. And if your child has translocation Down syndrome, then their siblings are 5% more likely to have a child with Down syndrome. However, there are other factors that do increase the risk. So a lot of women choose to have the test done. And there's nothing wrong with having the test done. We have a lot of families in our organization that received a prenatal diagnosis, and they were able to become informed and meet other families. And when the baby came, they welcomed the baby, and there wasn't a big shock, and they were very well adjusted. So there's a lot of reasons to find out prenatally. Just so that you, again, are prepared for what happens, because there is that moment after the baby comes when the doctor can stand there and say, hey, guess what?
And translocation Down syndrome, the type that means that your children will be more likely to have children with Down syndrome, even if they don't have Down syndrome themselves, I'm pretty sure that's only 1 or 2% of all people with Down syndrome that have that specific type, might even be less than that.
So these are blood tests, and it seems to me that pregnant women get a lot of blood tests for various different things. Is this something that will become the norm, that they will automatically screen for all the time, or at some point in the pregnancy when they're checking for other things, they'll also check for this? Or is this something that you actually have to ask for?
It's something that the doctors offer, and generally the doctors will offer it if the woman is of a certain age, over 35. Women can request it earlier, but again, since these new screenings are not diagnostics, they're actually screenings, the tests that have shown how accurate they are has only been shown on women over 35. So they're actually less accurate on women younger than that.
And it is a myth, I understand. Most people believe that Down syndrome is the product of someone who is over 35. And in fact, more Down syndrome children are born to women under 35. Is that true?
Yes, that is true. More children are born with Down syndrome are born to women under the age of 35 simply because of the fact that most children are born to women under the age of 35.
Right. But if you're over 35, that does definitely increase the chance.
We mentioned this one type of Down, translocation Down syndrome, that does sometimes indicate that it runs that type of Down runs in families. But there are actually three types of Down syndrome. What's the difference in the three types?
Okay, well, you mentioned translocation. Mm-hmm. The other one is just Down syndrome. It's trisomy 21, which is just three copies of the 21st chromosome. And then the second type actually has that little piece of that extra chromosome through all your different DNA in your body. So it's not just on the 21st chromosome. You know, with that one, some people say that you will see less of the features and less of the delays. And I think we do see that, but yet researchers will tell you that like the regular Down syndrome, that is the majority, you're still going to see all different abilities.
And that type is known as mosaic Down syndrome, I believe. And trisomy 21, the main type of Down syndrome, covers about 95% of people that do have Down syndrome.
How quickly are these different types recognizable, either to the physician or to the parent? And what are the implications of those different types presenting in a child?
They do the blood work right after your child is born, if it's a postnatal, Mike. So when my son Cameron was born, they took his blood. They did the karyotype, which shows you what the DNA is, and they tell you right then. So it takes about 3 days usually to get that result back. And right then they can tell you again what type it is. So, and really the biggest thing as a parent that was important to me was it translocation, because is it going to affect my daughters as well, or is there a chance it could affect my daughters? Otherwise, again, it tells you what their chromosomes look like, not who they are.
Do we understand what happens chromosomally, why that chromosome changes in a Down syndrome child? Do we understand what happened?
You know, everything that I have been taught is that it happens at conception, and there is no specific reason that's ever been found. There have been theories, but there's never been any proof of this is what causes Down syndrome, just that they know it happens at conception, and it's not that anybody does anything wrong, anybody ate a special food or drank a certain drink. It just happens.
Hmm. Doctors are sometimes not known for their bedside manner because they see conditions clinically and they sometimes have a difficult time, because they're not trained to do this really, to see things as patients in front of them, human beings in front of them. And Dr. Scottko mentioned that physicians should deliver the news of a Down syndrome child, either prenatally or postnatally, in a non-biased, neutral manner. Do you understand what that means? What does that mean?
Yes, as a parent, I can tell you exactly what it means. It means not using words such as positive and negative, not saying, having the first word you say being termination, or I'm sorry. I know that sounds weird, but as a parent, when somebody hands you your beautiful baby and says, I'm sorry they have Down syndrome, that's mm-hmm. automatically negative.
People tend to treat Down syndrome like a disease when they don't understand it. It's not really a disease, you know. It's something you live with. It's something that kind of creates your personality. It's part of who you are. It's not something you're fighting or looking to cure. And that's a misconception that a lot of people seem to have.
Yeah, and the key here, you just said it's something to live with. These young people live, and they live substantially good lives, many of them.
They do. They're some of the happiest people you'll ever meet.
And we're going to talk to one later on in the program, and I think he will prove that beyond a shadow of a doubt. Travis in Huntersville emails, I have a now 3-year-old with Down syndrome, and I want to encourage anyone who discovers their child may have the condition to keep their child. The blessings you will receive will far outweigh the difficulties. We went through heart surgery, pacemaker, thickening liquids, aspiration issues, and more, and there's likely more in the future, but we also have a lovely child who laughs, plays games, cuddles, learns, overcomes challenges, loves grandparents, makes friends, and is more like his typical older brother than unlike him. Please keep your child and be blessed.
Those are the kind of things you'll hear a lot just from the general Down syndrome community. And it definitely seemed like back in the late 1980s, around 1990, when Maddie was born, he's 24 now, just talking to my parents, it seems like the prenatal diagnoses back then were a lot likely to have a more negative connotation. Actually, some friends of my parents were given a prenatal diagnosis that their baby would have Down syndrome. The doctor recommended that they have an abortion. And then when the baby was born, it didn't even have Down syndrome. So the technology has come a long way, as well as people's perceptions. But you always have to take something like that with a grain of salt and do your research, you know?
Travis, in his email, mentioned some of the challenges that they faced, including heart surgery and a pacemaker and aspiration issues and things like that. If a child is diagnosed with cancer or some other life-threatening disease, we all know that families can incur great costs for medical care and treatment. Does that happen to the same extent with a child with Down?
It's very different with different children. 48% of children with Down syndrome are born with some type of heart defect. The majority of those are mild heart defects. You know, Jonathan mentioned that his brother Matty had a surgery when he was only a few weeks old. You do hear that from a lot of families, that babies with Down syndrome sometimes are in the NICU for a little while because they're not as strong, or they do have that heart surgery. So definitely there is an expense with that. With almost all of our children, they start early intervention and start receiving services, which is great. They get speech therapy, occupational therapy, and physical therapy, and there are many other therapies, and there are definitely huge costs involved in that. It's definitely more expensive to have a child with special needs than it is to have a typically developing child, simply because of the number of specialists. My son has seen more specialists in 10 years than I've seen in my whole life.
And in many cases where children have other conditions, medical conditions, families can set up special savings accounts to pay for those medical expenses. They're not unlike health savings accounts. Can that be done in the case of Down?
Nope, currently they cannot. There is a limit. If an individual with an intellectual disability has any income, whether it's from their parents or whether they're working and bringing that money in themselves, they can only save $2,000. That's the most amount of assets they can have in order to still be receiving any government benefits, which many of our, especially our adults with special needs, do have government benefits. So the ABLE Act is up, and hopefully it's going to pass soon, and it's the Achieving a Better Life Expectancy Act. And it is based on the college plan, the 529 plan, and that is the way that families and individuals themselves can actually save money. And they can spend it on, you know, when your child needs orthotics because their ankles turn in when they're walking, if they have surgery and, you know, your co-pays are, you know, astronomical. It even can be used for that adult with Down syndrome saving their money. They can buy a house with it. You know, it really is designed to give them the level of independence that they deserve to have, as well as when they're younger, allowing their parents to help cover these extra expenses.
This seems like a no-brainer to me. Is the lag time on this as opposed to other diseases primarily because the Down syndrome is just now becoming out of the shadows?
That could be part of it. You know, the ABLE Act really covers all disabilities. It's not Down syndrome specific. And it's moving pretty quickly. It actually has 74 co-sponsors in the Senate and 380 in the House already.
I have trouble with your last name, Catherine. I'm sorry. Catherine LaRiviere is Executive Director of the Down Syndrome Association of Greater Charlotte. Jonathan Isley is a board member. Both of them have family experience with a person with Down. And we're going to come back and meet one in just a moment. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Queen's University of Charlotte, where the Knight School of Communication offers a master's in communication designed for working professionals. Registration for the September 24th info session available at queens.edu. And South State Bank, a community bank with strong southern roots in operation since 1934. Information online at southstatebank.com. Advances in research are leading doctors to rethink how to treat cancer, and in some cases of early detection, whether to treat it at all. New ideas in the approach to cancer treatment coming up in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show. And if you'd like to join our conversation, email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org or search for WFAE on Facebook or Twitter. We're coming right back.
An extraordinary group of WFAE listeners is making a big difference. Over 2,500 sustaining members provide steady, ongoing support that keeps WFAE strong and independent, ensuring every member of our community has access to the highest quality public radio station available. Thank you, sustainers. You make WFAE happen. Learn more online about the power of sustaining membership at WFAE.org.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking today about Down syndrome in advance of the first ever Down syndrome conference organized by the Down Syndrome Association of Greater Charlotte. It'll be in town next week. Catherine LeRivière and Jonathan Isley are a member of the Down Syndrome Association, bringing that conference to town, and they join us in our studio today. Brandon on our website writes, "So glad to hear this show. My little brother Tristan has Down syndrome, and he is the best part of our family. He keeps us all real and happy, and he reminds us how wonderful life is. He's 15 years old. My parents were offered to terminate their pregnancy, and we are also glad that they did not. Tristan has changed so many lives for the better. He is a terrific person." John on Twitter writes, "Our youngest son, Zane, has Down syndrome, and it has been the biggest blessing to our family." These are great words to hear if you're a parent who has a worry about this. But obviously a child with a condition or a disease is going to change the family dynamic. You're slightly older than your brother, Maddie. He's in his 20s, Jonathan. How did your family dynamic change when Maddie arrived, and how has it changed over the course of the 24 or 27 years that Maddie's been around?
Well, as a younger sibling, it's easy to kind of think, what's wrong with my brother? Why is he not normal? I wish that he did not have Down syndrome. And you just kind of always ask yourself the question, what would life be like if this hadn't happened to Maddie? And then just through the years, as you grow up and learn to love each other, you realize that you wouldn't have it any other way. Kind of like Brandon saying about his brother Tristan being the best part of the family. It's no secret who the favorite child is in our family. Everyone will admit that it's Maddie. And my dad always says when Maddie was first born, a big moment for him, he got a call from Gene Stallings, who at that time was Alabama's head football coach. And who also had a son with Down syndrome that would help out with the team. And the one thing my dad remembers from that phone call is Gene telling him that this will be the most loving child you could ever have. And it's no secret that Maddie just kind of blows me and Michael, my other brother, out of the water in that category, because he's just awesome. There's nothing bad you can say about him.
But what I'm hearing also is that in normal situations, sibling rivalry might not be as kind. it's easier to dispense with sibling rivalry here.
Yeah. there definitely is still a lot of rivalry, though. And you know, we got into some fights, and we learned not to mess with Maddie either, because he could definitely kick our butts if he ever wanted to. He's tough.
Catherine, you're the mother of a 10-year-old with Down. How has the presence of Cameron changed your family?
You know, I mentioned it earlier briefly. My daughters, I have a 14-year-old and a 12-year-old daughter, and they're such good people, Mike. They're so giving, and, you know, they volunteer with the Down Syndrome Association all the time, but they also volunteer with our local ARC and just all types of things that I was never as welcoming and accepting and just open to people at that age that they are. You know, they get upset when somebody picks on somebody at their school because they're dressed differently or they look different, and they're always preaching to everybody about God made everybody different, and you just have to accept that.
Mitzi emails, "I have a beautiful 16-year-old daughter, Emma, born with Down syndrome. She has a twin sister, Abby, who is a typical child. These labels have always bothered me because, really, what is typical? Can any of us really be considered typical? Aren't we all born with some kind of special needs? Abby faces many, maybe even more, challenges as Emma. Emma's challenges are just more obvious. Giving both of them a strong sense of self to embrace their challenges and transcend them to the best of their ability is something every parent wants to instill in any child. Emma, having Down syndrome, does present learning challenges, and unfortunately, We live in a society which measures people's worth by their IQ and gives little value to a person's EQ, that's emotional intelligence, as opposed to intelligence quotient. I have come to understand that a person's EQ is perhaps of greater value to society than their IQ, and I believe Emma's main purpose is to teach and not necessarily to learn, and what a teacher she has proven to be. Have you heard that before about these kids?
Yeah, definitely. And Mitzi couldn't have said it better. That was perfect. It really is true. The children with Down syndrome tend to be just incredibly good socially. You know, you hear the myth about all children with Down syndrome are happy, and of course they're not always happy. They have the same range of emotions as everybody does. But people with Down syndrome do tend to be very, very socially aware. I heard one mom say one time that her daughter would come over and hug her because she knew she was upset before the mom even realized she was upset. And my son, Cameron, is very much like that. You know, he's very keyed into people. He'll test you and he'll mess with you if he sees that you let him, you know, walk all over you. But he just comes up and hugs because your body language is tense and he knows you're upset, you know. So absolutely, that emotional intelligence and that ability to read people and respond to them, it's phenomenal.
You know, we've been talking about these kids, and we wanted to bring someone with Down syndrome into this conversation. So we got in touch with Brendan Hemeke, who will be speaking along with his sister Casey, who also has Down syndrome, at next week's Down syndrome conference. Unfortunately, he could not join us live during this show because he's working at a local grocery store. But we sent one of our producers, Alexia Girodi, out to talk to him about what his life is like. And she started by asking him to describe himself.
I'm excellent. I'm hardworking, dependable, lovable. I'm just a well-rounded guy. I'm excellent at work.
Mm-hmm. He's also well-rounded. Brendan has participated in the Special Olympics in Virginia when he lived there and now in North Carolina. And that's not all.
I did a bocce, retry spinning. Also, I do a tennis. My sister and I both do tennis together. I'm a little different than my sister. It's my sister does basics. I am doing so-called.
So we also asked him a very basic but an extremely important question. Are you happy?
Oh, yes, very much. Being with my family, my friends, spend time with my cousins and my sister, and with my parents who went on one with my mom and dad.
And Brendan also assured us that he is not the exception to the rule.
I know a lot of people who have it. I would say that you look good, and I'm slow, but you could get things done on time.
Now, Brendan knows a lot of people with Down syndrome because he created his own meetup group, something he started on the internet. And he now has an email list, and he and his members meet once a month at a local restaurant. And he also told us that he'll be moving out of the house soon.
That's what my dad says. I'm not sure, but I know one thing. I know I will move out before my sister would. I have mixed emotions about that, because when I do go out, I will miss my family, but on the other hand, I will feel ecstatic about that, because I'm out on my own, fun solo, and that's the thing that I like.
Finally, Brendan Hemeke has some advice for parents who have been told prior to birth that their child will be born with Down syndrome.
I would say good luck, congratulations on your baby, and I hope your baby is either girl or boy, or that doesn't really matter what it is, as long as the baby comes out safe and happy, and you want to give them shelter also.
All in all, that sounds pretty normal and pretty darn smart. That's 32-year-old Brendan Hemeke, who will not only be speaking at next week's conference, but he sits on the board of the Down Syndrome Association of Greater Charlotte and has also been a speaker for Special Olympics. Tell us more about Brendan. Catherine and Jonathan, you both know him.
Well, you heard it all right there, but Brendan is a very, very motivated person, and he definitely keeps us all in check on the board. He's always willing to speak up, and he's pretty competitive, too. I don't know. He might be president someday.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me. It's been wonderful having Brendan on the board. And, you know, exactly like you were talking about, he created this a meetup group for our adults with Down syndrome. And they get together and it gives them such an awesome opportunity just to hang out. And he brings so much to the organization. And he does keep us in line, like Jonathan said. But a lot of what he does for the organization is give us that voice. You know, some people on the board are professionals and some are parents. But Brendan's actually living it. He actually gives us the voice of the people that we're here to support.
And, you know, he embodies, I think, I met my first Down syndrome individual when I was in college because a friend of mine's brother had Down and went over to his house, and there he was, and we had a very, very long conversation, he and I. And one of the things that struck me then, and it struck me when we talked to Brendan, is the genuine sweetness, caring, and intelligence of these people.
It's easy to kind of write them off because a lot of the times they'll be kind of quiet, not as likely to speak up. But yeah, when you really do ask questions, just like you did with Brendan, you realize that there is a lot going on in their brains. They're always thinking, they're always picking things up, always listening, and it's surprising, always, no matter who it is.
Yeah, there's a full-fledged person in there, a person who is thoughtful, who feels, who cares, who demonstrates that caring openly, which most of us do not. It's really refreshing, actually.
Yep, very honest, and you never feel like there's any hidden agendas there, you know? Mm-hmm. They'll tell you what they're feeling, and that's about it.
Mm-hmm. Now, I just put the connection together, Jonathan, that your name is Jonathan Isley.
Yes.
You are John Boy's boy.
That is correct. I am guilty of that. I thought maybe I could make it through this whole hour without anyone finding out. But
well, I have to ask because I you know, I don't know John Boy of John Boy and Billy well. Our paths crossed in the middle of 1980s because we worked in the same building together, and they've gone on to be superstars in broadcasting, and here I am. But anyway,
they're doing all right.
John Boy has gotten up at, I don't know when he gets up, 3 o'clock in the morning, for 30 years. When you have a child, when you have any children, that's a challenge. Because, you know, your sleep schedule is completely different than everybody else in the house. How did that impact him? How did having your brother have impact him and his ability to do his job? Obviously not much.
You know, I guess it didn't, and I never really paid attention to it when I was younger because, yeah, like you said, he'd be up well before dawn, probably about the same time that Maddie was going to sleep, come to think of it. I'm sure the afternoon power nap did him a lot of good. But, yeah, it's been a hectic schedule, and a lot of it has definitely fallen on my mom, always being there to take care of Maddie. But that was something that they knew they were signing up for from the beginning, and, you know, they're committed to having Maddie around just as long as they can. He's the child that will probably never leave home, but they couldn't be too much happier about that.
Wow. Catherine, how many programs are there in this area that provide information, first of all, and support to those families who have Down syndrome or who are expecting a child with Down?
Here in the greater Charlotte area, we're the only Down Syndrome Association. There are a lot of other great organizations such as Easter Seals and the local ARC offices that provide support to individuals with Down syndrome. But we cover Mecklenburg County and the 12 counties surrounding it. And we are the only first call program, like I mentioned, which is the one that really reaches out specifically to prenatal and postnatal families who have just received that diagnosis.
And your organization, the Down Association of Greater Charlotte, has, I'm told, has one of only 8 first call programs in the country. You rolled it out in 2013. Talk about that program, and why is it here in Charlotte?
You know, a lot of it's from Brian Scottco, as you've already interviewed him earlier. And our organization was very lucky to meet up with Dr. Scottco and the Massachusetts Down Syndrome Congress, which is the largest Down syndrome local Down syndrome organization in the country. And they created this first call program. And at that, before that, we were doing something. We were reaching out as much as we could, but we actually brought the people from the Massachusetts Congress down here to actually train us. And the big difference is there's a 6-hour training program for those volunteers. So it really is, they're counselors. They're actually being trained to be counselors. So, you know, they're going to be careful about what they say to new families, and they're going to remember what it's like to be someone who just received a diagnosis. And like I mentioned, they really have to focus on providing knowledge and providing information, not providing opinions.
What does it mean to have that program in Charlotte?
It's huge for us. You know, since we rolled it out last year, we have received so many more first call outreaches from hospitals. Part of what we also do is we have a program director in our office, and one of our board members is a genetic counselor. And they go out to local hospitals and actually talk to the nursing staff. They do what's called an in-service to actually help them understand what our first call program is and why it's important. And since they've started doing that, the number of nurses who are contacting us, they send us a fax that says this baby was just born with Down syndrome. It's just been astronomical. We had three of them just last week.
And you also partner with area schools. Is that to familiarize faculty and staff with some of the challenges they might face or are faced by children with Down?
Absolutely. It's called the Down Syndrome Together in Education Program, and it's where we work directly with partnering in the school system.
And is this event, the first ever Carolina's Down Syndrome Conference next week, open to the public?
Absolutely. There's information on our website, and I believe it's going to be on WFAE as well.
Okay, well, we'll put that on our website at WFAE.org. Catherine LaRiviere, Executive Director of the Down Syndrome Association of Greater Charlotte. Jonathan Isley, a member of the Board of Directors of that organization. And I've decided, Jonathan, that we're going to do John Boy's Boy and Mikey as long as we can achieve the same success that your dad has had in broadcasting. Is that okay with you?
Hey, I'm on board. I can't guarantee anything, but I'll see what I can do.
All right.